show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Begin countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said.
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Guy James Show. Another one of those hang on to your wallet days. I see the stock market's down 210 right now. Oh, my God. There goes my huge portfolio. No, it doesn't hurt me, but it hurts us all in some way. Don't know why I started out with stock market news. Happened to be looking over at it. Don't know what gold and oil is today. I'll look that up for you in just a little while. Welcome to the Guy James Show. Coming to you from the Blue Waters and Sandy Beaches of beautiful southwest Florida, Fort Myers, Naples area. It was rainy this morning. It's so maybe 74, 75 degrees right now and a bit cloudy. I know you're getting some snow up north, a few of you. Talked to my brother out in Phoenix today. Called me a while ago. It was like 32 degrees or so, very cold. So it does get cold in Phoenix. We've got a lot to talk about today. I hope you feel like talking too, because I don't want to talk for the whole 2 hours. I want to hear from you. I do. I want to hear what's on your mind about this current political season, what you think about the economy. It's important that we all hear from you. You know, I have my opinions. I have my ideas. I have my facts. And, you know, I'm interested in them. You're probably interested in some of them. But we're all interested in hearing from you as well. And you can call us at 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Now, do me a favor, will you? Write this down. TheGuyJamesShow.com/blog. That's not the website. It's TheGuyJamesShow.com is the website. But head on over to the new blog. I didn't put anything up there today. I got lazy today and didn't put anything up. But we want to get this blog rolling. And it's TheGuyJamesShow.com/blog. Feel free to comment on anything I put up there or anything anybody else has put up there. And not getting enough play on this blog. And I hope you'll join in. Again, 866-546-5254. If you've got an unlimited calling plan, please do give us a call at 941-876-6896. I do have something very important to talk about today. I'm going to hold off for just a little bit because I know once I get started on it, I'm not going to be able to quit. We heard about Huckabee in his statement yesterday, and I've got something to say about some other statements that have been made since then. Seem like I'm saying a lot today. I do see the big news, and this broke during the show yesterday, and not having a chance to research it completely during the show, I didn't want to say anything about it, but I see that we have a Republican. Yes. I know This is absolutely astonishing and very, very, very difficult for all of our friends to believe this story. I know it is, but we have a former U.S. congressman, that's right, the highest ranking U.S. official ever, you know, even in the past, being charged with terror conspiracy. That's right. Mark Delisiljander, I guess that's the way you pronounce his name, a former Michigan Republican, former member of the House of Representatives, former Reagan appointee to the United Nations, I don't know what to say. What can you say? If he was a delegate to the United Nations by Ronald Reagan, and he's been charged with money laundering and terrorist funding and a mess, part of a terrorist fundraising ring that sent more than $130,000 to Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. Folks, this is a Republican. Do you understand what I'm saying here? Does the mainstream media understand what I'm saying? A Republican indicted on charges of working for an alleged terrorist fundraising ring. A Republican. When I stop and think about it, though, I don't know that it's a big surprise. Certainly not, you know, I wouldn't want to say that Republicans are known for doing that sort of thing. I wouldn't want to say that. But is it really any surprise? The religious right has been in line with the Islamic terrorist doctrine for decades now. You know, think about it. Their hatred for homosexuals and the anti-choice, and they want a whole lot more religious involvement in government yesterday. We know that one of their prime candidates right now wants... absolutely wants us to chuck the Constitution and you know, rewrite it using the Bible. We heard that yesterday out of his own mouth. So I don't know. Don't know what's going to happen there, but find that to be an interesting story. Locally here, to our local listeners, Carl Icahn. You all know Carl Icahn, the corporate raider. There's a company here called WCI, a big building company. And it was formerly headed up by a gentleman named Al Hoffman, who happened to be one of the Bush pioneers, you know, raised a fortune for Bush. And whenever they have a big fundraiser down here, he has his huge mansion down on the Caloosahatchee River. And it's one of those deals where they charge, I don't know how many thousand dollars per plate. And the Republican luminary comes in and speaks for 5 minutes and walks out with, you know, $500,000, $2 million. I don't know how much, a lot. Hoffman was the head of this company. They filed bankruptcy. Carl Icahn is pulling them out of it, I guess, as the story goes. Hoffman, of course, cashed in his chips and then went on to be the ambassador to Portugal. Little tidbit thrown his way by Junior Bush. But he got out in plenty of time. Got out in plenty of time. Cashed in. Cashed in, but good. We may talk about that a little bit more later on in the program. It may not be of any interest to anybody except just local people here. We did hear a lot about tax cuts, and we've had a lot about tax cuts, and I've been doing a lot of studying about this in the past few days. And inflation, we talked about that a little bit yesterday. The U.S. inflation rate in 2007, I got a big chart in front of me here. The inflation rate was out of sight, and just a few things at the grocery store. I've been talking about food prices. Eggs were up almost 30% last year. Milk was up 13%. Citrus fruit up 10%. Bread up 7.5%. Coffee up over 6%. Cheese 6%. Chicken 6%. Health insurance over 10%. Gas up over 8%. Fuel oil 7.5%. College tuition almost 6.5%. Oh, and weekly earnings 0.9%. I just listed a whole lot of staples here. Things you must buy. Gas and fuel and insurance and college tuition free. Well, you don't have to buy that. And food. And all of them up significantly over last year. But weekly earnings up 0.9%. Where does that leave you, my friends? Where does it leave you? Well, I know where it leaves you. It leaves you behind the eight ball. Leaves me behind the eight ball. Leaves all of the common working folks screwed. But don't you worry. We've got the politicians all talking about tax cuts. Yes, sir. Tax cuts. We've got all this talk about tax cuts right now. Tax cuts, tax cuts, tax cuts. And we know the Democrats and Republicans are talking about two different kinds of tax cuts. We do know that, don't we? The Republicans want to pass some nice fat corporate tax cuts with the idea, of course, as always, being that the cuts will stimulate jobs and growth and yada, 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 yada. And the Republicans also want to make the tax cuts for the wealthy permanent, the ones that are already in place for our well-heeled friends. They want to make those permanent. They say it's going to help. Well, it'll help the wealthy and no one else, as always. Wouldn't you think we've learned our lesson now about this mythical trickle-down nonsense from St. Ronnie of Reagan back in his day? In his lucid moments, if he had any. I think he did early on in his career. But I think the Democrats need to understand a couple of points here. First, they have to defeat any notion of corporate tax cuts and permanent cuts for the wealthy. They've got to stand up against these things. Finally, take a stand. Damn it! Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi, gather your forces together, show some leadership, and when they start talking about big tax cuts for the wealthy again, making those permanent, and big corporate tax cuts, tell them where to stick those. Stand and fight to the political death against both of those things. And secondly, what's the big deal about tax cuts for the middle class? I'm starting to hear again, and I don't know how many of you were involved in this the last time around, but I'm starting to hear about another one of these rebate scams. And we know damn well that that's exactly what it was. We all remember the last time where families got the princely sum of around $300, I believe it was. I didn't look it up for sure, but that figure sticks in my mind, which was a drop in the bucket. But it was just another instance of the wealthy running off with the steak while the rest of us ate the government cheese. That's exactly what it was. They bought votes with a stinking $300. And they're talking about that. Are they talking about like $250 now or something? Oh, hell. Please. Please don't insult us. You know, the tax cuts line the pockets of the people who least need them. That's always the way it is. If we have cuts, they need to be directed squarely at the middle class. The ones who pay a lot of tax, the ones who have been devastated by the fact that their money is buying less and less and less every minute, like I just told you about on the staples. We've heard this GOP crap before. Give the fat cats the tax cuts and they'll create new jobs. Yeah. Hey, the middle class needs more money from their jobs. They don't need new jobs. Well, we do need some new jobs. But the jobs people have, they need to make some more money. Wages are flat. And they need to know that if they can buy a gallon of milk and a gallon of gas with an hour's work this year, they need to be able to know they'll still be able to do that next year. That is the problem. How are these new jobs going to help if inflation eats away at their paychecks like it's doing right now? And new jobs, guess what kind of new jobs these fat cats are looking to create? You got it. You know what kind of jobs we're talking about. They'll create more poverty level paying jobs so that they can pocket the difference between that and the increased productivity and get even richer. Tax cuts for the wealthy creating new jobs. Give me a break. And also consider the fact that corporate tax cuts also often means given tax cuts to these big multinational corporations, and the money ends up overseas in foreign investments, often creating new jobs for foreign workers at a few cents per hour. And you know what that does? That drives the American worker on down into poverty by lowering his wages as well. The Democrats had better figure out quick that these gimmicks, such as a little tax rebate check, they don't amount to spit. And they're nothing but a ruse to buy a few votes from folks who are desperate for a few dollars. And they better be looking at the bigger picture. They had better be looking at a middle class that's gradually drowning because inflation is eating up their paychecks. And they had better see that the money is all being funneled into the pockets of a few instead of being spread amongst the many, like when the middle class was flourishing and the country was flourishing along with them. You will always see a flourishing nation if the middle class is flourishing. I will guarantee you that fact. Do you want to see a massive recession or a deep depression? You just keep devastating the middle class worker. Just keep giving them every reason not to have any consumer confidence. You add that fact onto this lending crisis, house payments going up, house values going down, property taxes going up, insurance going up, more and more foreclosures, people thrown out into the streets, nowhere to go. More and more families find that sending their kids to college is only a pipe dream. Kids are getting out of school now and going straight to Walmart to work. Many kids, college is impossible. So get a job and go to college, kid. Hey, the wages won't pay for it. We've got the standard of living spiraling ever downward for millions and millions of family. You watch that continue to happen, and you're going to see an economic nightmare in this country that you could never have imagined in your wildest dreams. You'll see massive poverty, and you'll see this country come apart at the seams. I guarantee you, if the middle class goes completely apart, this country will as well. And I know that sounds bad, and I know that sounds gloomy. I agree that it's a gloomy picture. But we can't forsake the working people in this country. We've got to be real here. We've got to start doing something meaningful about what we can all see on the horizon if we just open our eyes a little bit. You know, one thing I think everybody had better remember, and you better realize, all you Republicans out there, and in people wearing the rose-colored glasses, do remember that this is no longer a society where we're all in the boat together, because we are not. Oh, no. There are definitely two boats. One of them is this gleaming, new, dazzling luxury liner with your white tablecloths and your crystal. And the other one's a garbage scow. And guess which one most of us are destined to be on if the Republicans have their way with these tax cuts? You know where these tax cuts are going. You know where they're headed. Give me a break with those. I hate to even hear them talk about it. I do. 866-546-5254. I'm going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
This is Pete Seeger. What country comes to mind when you hear this? The government illegally spies on civilians, produces phony news reports. People are imprisoned without charge or access to a lawyer. Prisoners are tortured and killed, and an illegal war launched on the basis of lies in which illegal weapons are used against civilians, against journalists and hospitals. Unfortunately, the United States government is behind these actions. Fortunately, our Constitution has a remedy. It's called impeachment. Ask your Congress member to impeach George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Good to have all of you along with us. You can give us a call at 866-546-5254. Let's head on over to the phones right now. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Is that I?
Yes.
Hi, my name's Scott, and I'm calling from Sweden.
Hi, Scott. Good to have you along with us.
Yeah, I'm listening on the net, and I'm an expat. I grew up in Ohio, which I guess you're from.
Yes, sir.
And I've been living here for 24, 25 years now, like a quarter of a century, when I realized where the Reagan train was heading, and I met a Swedish woman and bugged out. And I'm listening as you're talking about the dissolution of the United States and its lack of solidarity and the general like ignorance and apathy and maybe willing ignorance. And it contrasts so strongly with what we see here in this part of Europe and Scandinavia, where there still is a solidarity and an awareness, and there's a general knowledge that things can go to hell in a handbasket real quick if people lose sight of each other's welfare. And so I just kind of want to urge your listeners to know that it is possible. It does happen if people pull together. I guess you know this as well as I. Getting the people to know their own strengths is the rub, as Shakespeare would say.
Well, yeah, and you know, if you're in Sweden, Scott, I think you know the thinking of the ugly American. And how, for so many years, I think a lot of people are wising up now in the information age, but, you know, the most prosperous, the highest standard of living, we've got everything and nobody else has anything, and, you know, yeah, we're the biggest, most powerful, toughest, meanest, most educated, you know, everything. Tell us, in Sweden and the Scandinavian countries, what's the standard of living like right now?
We've passed the general standard of living in the U.S. for the average person. What we don't have are the extremes. It's all much more towards the middle, towards the average. You pay a lot of taxes in Sweden. We even have like a 25% sales tax, which, you know, people would freak out if they heard that in the States.
So is that a value-added tax?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, but as some British judge once said, you pay your taxes, but you buy civilization.
Ah, excellent way to put it.
Yeah, and I have friends here who, this woman who's about my age, in the 50s, she has three severely retarded children, or handicapped, we're going to call it, and she works at a very minimum level job, taking care of other people, you know, in need, the elderly and such, and yet she has, by being a Swede, she has universal health care like everybody else. Transport is subsidized through the tax fare. She just pays a minimal fare and rides the bus. And she has a good quality life. She's in a very nice apartment and is making it. She's not rich. She never will be. but she is solidly lower middle class and a condition that in the United States wouldn't work. You have to be extremely fortunate to succeed as she can because people look out for each other.
What do you think? What's the difference? What's the difference in the psyche?
Well, I think one of the differences is smallness. There are 8.5 million Swedes, so we know that we're not a lot of people here. Then that unless we look out for other Swedes, it's going to be subsumed. So I think having a small country in a way facilitates awareness of each other's needs. Because you see that in all the Scandinavian countries, of which Sweden is the largest, and it only has a population of Ohio, mm-hmm. In an area the size of California. So that, I think, is one reason. The other is being in Europe and seeing the Depression, the fascism in the 30s, the world blown to hell in the 40s, that when the Marshall Plan came along and this idea of Keynesian economics in which you use the state to and policy to steer for social goals, it really took home. Everybody didn't want to go through that again. So in the 40s and such, the welfare state was pretty much nailed into place because people had hit bottom in the 30s. And I'm afraid that might be the U.S.'s only road to awareness, is it's got to really hit bottom, as you were describing earlier. That scares the willies out of me, but maybe since people can't seem to wake up just on the basis of what they read and hear, they may have to experience.
I in a country of 300 million people, and with jobs being exported at a rapid rate, hitting bottom here in that manner will just be an absolute catastrophe, not only just for the people in this country. It'll be hard times. It'll affect the rest of the world as well.
The rest of the world is looking at the United States and wondering whether it's more of a liability than an asset anymore.
That's one thing I wanted to ask you, Scott. You're an expat, as you say. You know a lot of Swedish people. You talk to them. What is the general attitude right now toward America?
Towards the United States?
Yes.
My main question is, is there a
difference anymore? So many years, a lot of people said, well, we don't like the American government, but we love the American people. Well, I've heard a lot of Europeans now say, hey, you guys are asking for this. You voted these guys in and all that. We don't have any sympathy for you.
Well, in a way, but other people also realize that the United States is kind of a special basket case when it comes to public education, and it's poorly managed, it's poorly run, it's so isolated. I mean, culture flows out of the United States. I mean, nobody watches European movies, European shows, read European. It's so isolated in a way, despite the internet and all this mass information. So I don't know. People are frustrated and fed up with it, but at the same time, they realize that you can howl all day long, and the Americans are just going to plug on in their own. You know, what was that movie? Something with Shirley where they drive over the cliff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Laverne. Yeah, I almost said Laverne and Shirley. Thelma and Louise,
yeah.
I think it was.
Yeah, it seems to be on a crash course. And people are mad and frustrated. They're a little angry that if the U.S. belly flops, is going to drag most of the world down with it. And, yeah. People are fed up with the United States. They still like individual Americans they meet. They still listen to American music, and you know, it's like culturally it's okay. But you know, in the 30s they liked German culture too.
Yeah.
They were afraid and angry then.
Sure. So. Sure. Well, you know, I think it was Winston Churchill. Of course, they attribute every quote to Winston Churchill. I think him and Ben Franklin. But I think it was Winston Churchill who said America always does the right thing after they've tried everything else first.
Yeah,
and I hope we're not on that path, and I do hope that. Well, let me ask you this, and I'm putting you on the spot here by asking you: do you think that if we get a good government and fly right for a couple of terms during a good administration, do you think we can resurrect our reputation to the point where we'd be respected like we once were?
Okay, they're going to have to break that down into components here, because I think if the first part is true and all of that happens, the people will be relieved, they'll be glad, and they'll be very, they'll be glad, happy. But whether it ever gets up to the level it once was is another question. And you might gain back much of it, most of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the proof is always in the pudding. I mean, the U.S. would then have to take a real leadership role and prove that it is now a new generation and a new group of people. Forgiveness is possible, because I mean, if you look at people's attitudes towards the current Germans now, which is such a radical change between the 30s and now, I mean, Germany is now a leader in a very progressive country. So change is possible, but you have to demonstrate the change by living it.
Sure.
And lip service just won't cut it.
No. Well, we've got a lot of work to do, and that's one of the reasons for the show. And we've got some educating
can I give
to
you,
do. Yes.
Excuse me. We have one example of one Americans who might be listening to know about what solidarity can still be like in a modern age, in another country. And you can do it too, guys. Is that a few years ago, maybe a decade ago in Sweden, Toys R Us decided they were going to come into Sweden, they were going to pay non-union wage, which is 70% unionized here, ponder that, and they're going to bust the Swedish model as a test case, because, you know, the corporatists of the United States, they hate the welfare state. So they come in, they open up, and the word gets out, and there is like a general wildcat strike. Dock workers won't move the stuff off the boats. They won't. Bank tellers wouldn't process their transactions. Truckers wouldn't move their goods. It's like the people all got together and said, "This is the wedge coming in, and we're not putting up for it." And just almost spontaneously, with a little encouragement from the unions, they just closed that company policies down, and the only way they could survive is they had to sign on to the basic union package, and they did. And every company since then that has tried to do something like that gets the same treatment.
Interesting. Yeah.
Very much so. It's awareness, and the schools teach social democracy. They don't teach patriotism. They teach their history here, warts and all. They basically teach the lesson that power left unrestricted is going to screw the individual, and you as a citizen have to monitor it. The old civics lessons you probably remember as a kid.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that sort of stuff is still banking around in Europe, although it may be gone for the most part in the U.S. So.
Let me ask you, you mentioned education. If you want higher education in Sweden, what goes on there?
You apply for it, and if your grades pass muster, you're in.
Okay.
The tuition is absolutely tax paid for.
Mm.
Because the thinking here is, of course, well, a well-educated person who knows what they're doing, well, they'll get a nice little job and they'll pay all those little taxes that buy civilization again.
Sure.
That investment in an individual is an investment in society.
25 years you've been there.
Oh, yeah. And my biggest nightmare is I actually have this nightmare. I wake up and I dream I'm back in the States. It's a shameful thing to say, but it's true.
Well, I have this reoccurring nightmare that I wake up and see that we have this guy named Bush as president, and it's.
Well, I've heard of that guy. He's a don't elect him. Well, you didn't.
Well, I didn't. Scott, yeah. I want to thank you so much for calling. I encourage you to call back again. I've really enjoyed talking to you and picking your brain. I think a lot of people really need to hear what it's like in other countries and understand the feelings toward the United States, and understand that other countries have really come along, and we're not this icon anymore.
In that spirit, I was like, the U.S. was the prototype democracy, and it was excellent for the 1700s, late 1700s, early 1800s. But like any good invention, others come along and perfect it.
Sure.
And that is more or less the case of what happened in Europe, is that seeing what the U.S. was and its disadvantages and advantages, they went on to make stronger, better democracies. Now it's time for the U.S. to admit, okay, we had a prototype and we could learn from others. Do that, and I think things could really pick up. But I agree. I would love to hear some sort of a program where you can collect a bunch of expats, come on one night, and really discuss what's going on and kind of have a show and tell.
Oh, yes. Yes, that would be good. Hey, send us an email. Maybe we'll set something up like that. GuyJames@theGuyJamesShow.com.
Will do.
Hey, thanks so much for your call,
Scott.
Okay,
give him hell and go Bucks.
Thank you. Go Bucks indeed.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Ah, yes, go Bucks. Man, warms my heart. Interesting conversation. I wish we had more calls like that. I often hear from expats from other countries. I have a gentleman that I often correspond with in South Korea and another in France and one in New Zealand also as well that we regularly talk back and forth, and people usually listen to the show on in the archives. But it's important for us to know what things are like in other countries and the attitudes that they have and feelings they have toward the United States now. It's very, very important. I talked a little bit about the housing market just a few minutes ago. I did a study on this today, and then I saw a video on it, and I wrote down a few things. We're talking about how tough this housing market is right now. And back in 2006, these adjustable rate mortgages, and you know how they were advertising them. Oh, yes, get the ARM. You got the discounted interest rate and all that. 12% of the people that took out those loans and took out home loans in 2006 got the adjustable rate mortgage. And, of course, the sales pitch was rates, low as 2%. And so if you went out and bought a $400,000 house, which to some of you sounds like a lot of money, and to some of you it doesn't, depending on where you live and your economic status, but a $400,000 home, if you took it and paid that teaser rate, that 2%, it cost you $1,478 a month. Now, that sounds like a heck of a deal, a $400,000 home for only $1,478 a month. Now, if you paid the regular interest rate, the 7% that it ought to be, you'd have paid $2,661 as opposed to $1,478, and it made it a whole lot more affordable, on that teaser rate. But the only thing is, on that teaser rate, by paying only the 2%, you were having $1,183 added to your balance to your original $400,000 every month. And lots of people only paid in the minimum, and 80% of the adjustable rate mortgage holders only paid the minimum. And after 3 years, the house that you bought for $400,000, the loan you had for $400,000, went up to $442,500. So your mortgage went up by 10%. You're still paying that teaser rate, but, and I'll get back to the phones here in just a moment, but now it's time to pay the piper, and you get the adjusted payment. And it goes up to $3,044 a month because your balance is now $442,000. And so you pay that $3,044 a month for 10 more years. And after 10 years of paying it, then your balance is down to the $400,000 again. You can see you're swimming upstream here. And after 15 years, you still owe $350,000. And add that on to the fact that maybe your property dropped in value 10 or 12%, or in the case of where we live here, even more. You can see what's happened to this mortgage in this mortgage crisis. It's absolutely amazing. Let's head on over to the phone. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Guy, hey, it's Sandra. I think I called your show all 3 days. I don't know. But just like to comment on the guy from Sweden. I mean, it's interesting to hear that perspective. And the thing that stuck out the most with me was how he was describing that woman who is supporting her kids, but she's living a reasonable life.
Yes.
And the thing about it struck me is that, yeah, you don't have people that are sitting around hoping and dreaming and knowing they're going to be rich one day. Like, huge swaths of this country is mesmerized by, you know. I think people live a real delusional life in America on some levels, you know.
Oh, they do. There's no question they do.
And, you know, because people think middle class is $20,000 a year, and I have news for them, it's not. You know what I mean?
Certainly not.
And a lot of people are just sort of operating in the fantasy world. And I think that, you know, at least in Sweden, I mean, he talked about some of the differences. The main difference that he didn't mention was it's homogenized. I mean, all the Swedes are alike. You don't have that in America, which has to be acknowledged. There's so many different types of people living in a so-called one country, you know?
Well, that is a fact. That is a fact. We've got them all here. We do.
And which is, you know, which obviously is an upside, but it's a downside if no one is aware of the Bill of Rights and the sort of things that unify us, you see? And that's the problem I see, is that the common thread has almost disappeared, you know?
Sure. Sure. Yeah,
I mean, it has. And I'm just... Because we all love our country. I'd like to think that most people who listen to this show do. But, you know, it's just almost depressing listening to this guy from Sweden, because, I mean, I've lived in Europe. I know that welfare state is valued there. It's not looked down upon like it is here.
Well, sure. There's more of a sense of community in many nations. And like you said, people are concerned about one another. They know that taking care of one another is something that's important to the survival of the entire country. I don't know that we've learned that yet here. It appears that we have not.
No, and you know, it scares me, the thought of bottoming out. I'm like, what does that mean? Because so many of my friends live, we all live with no health care. You know what I'm saying? What is bottoming out? What does that mean? I mean, how much further will it have to go?
Well, I'm afraid I studied econ a lot when I was younger, in college and in high school and afterwards, and it's always been I'm a numbers guy. I, along with the many economists whose opinions matter, mine doesn't. I'm afraid it's the outlook, you know, and it's just my opinion I'm talking about. I think the outlook is horrible.
Well, I think that it's, you know, I mean, I too have studied some econ. I think it looks to be unraveling.
Yes.
That's what it looks like is going on, because no matter how much they keep piling on, it isn't doing the trick this time. Have you noticed that?
Oh, it isn't. And as you know, we're still having people talking up the market. I hope they're right. I hope their enthusiasm is merited, but here I'm looking minus 289 as of right now today.
Yeah, I'm looking at the New York, minus 290, and they said, I heard someone say this is the worst start for the stock market since 1978. I was a teenager, but I don't remember the late 70s and early 80s being a bit of a nightmare in this country.
Yeah.
And they're talking about it's the worst start since there. And this sort of $600 rebate, Jesus, please tell me they're not going to try that again.
Yeah, well, it buys votes, doesn't it? It did the last time, and it will again. There'll be a lot of people, I'll take my check.
I can't, no, there's no way that people will fall for that again.
You don't think?
Well, listen, I'm trying to, like, operate.
You've got more faith than I do.
Oh, my Lord. And I heard this bastard talking about the permanent tax cuts again. These people will use any disaster to codify the madness, because we don't need these people not paying their fair share. They use the majority of the government services. They need to pay for it, don't they?
They do, but they do not. That's the thing. People talking about a fair tax. Well, a fair tax would be for the wealthy to pay for the share of government services that they use, as opposed to everybody else. I'm tired of hearing that figure of the upper 10% pays 90% of the taxes. Well, they use a good bit of the government services as
no,
well.
And that's a lie. You know, I mean, this is sort of a bit arcane, but you know, Rome, when it was going out, part of the reason was they were fooling people and saying that the rich were paying a lot of taxes when they really weren't. Most of the taxes were being paid by the middle classes and all the other people. I mean, that contributed to the fall of Rome. And I swear to God, we're in a similar type situation, you know,
well,
where the rich are claiming to be paying, and they're not. They're not. As far as I can tell, they went from 70% in the 60s to, what is it now, 25%, 10% for hedge fund?
Well, and the thing is, people, a big thing people forget here is, you know, you got if you make big money, you can hire a good accountant, and nobody. Nobody is going to pay 25% in tax. Nobody.
And not only that, but if you are earning your money on investments and that kind of stuff, isn't it an honor system? They're not compensating your money every paycheck like they do wage earners, right?
Well, yeah, honor system, and you're supposed to have the documents to back it up when you file it at the end of the year. But the wage earners, yes, sir, you're going to pay for it, and you're going to pay it right now.
That's what I'm saying. So it's just... The whole system is ass backwards, and as in my econ class, you know, they're stuck in this Chicago school bullshit that they're feeding the students. So we're sitting here being taught that this trickle down mess is the way it should be. And I don't know what happened to Keynesian economic thought, but trust me, in the schools today, they're not teaching it.
No, certainly not. Certainly not. Nobody.
Anyway, sorry for the language.
Oh, don't worry about it. I stray off the path myself now and then.
Okay. All right. Well, have a good weekend, guys.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye.
Do I think we bottom out? Do I think we're going? Yeah. And I think we're a long ways from it. I think we're a long ways from it. And I hate to come on here and say that day after day, but things just don't look good. Look at this market again today. Refreshing it here. Yeah, it's minus 289.96 right now. Not good. Not good. Even though I don't have a portfolio to brag about, that is not good. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back.
What have I missed? Living like this. Who think I'd get this for? Fancy house in my fancy car. Why you living like this? Together as kids. You are my best of friend. All the trouble you gotta bring. See, I've been there. And I've been scared. I've been discriminated against and compared.
Welcome back to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Thanks to Agnes and Bob and everybody for taking care of everybody at the home office. Thanks to Billy Shears, music director. And thanks to you for joining us here on the program today. We had a couple of great calls already today, and we hope you'll entertain the idea of giving us a call at 866-546-5254. We do love hearing from you. If you've got an unlimited calling plan, 941-876-6896. See, John McCain is leading in South Carolina despite the smears against him, which you knew, you certainly knew would come. They've got a thing against John McCain in the Republican Party, a lot of them do, don't they, the big shots. And I also see that Obama is leading in South Carolina. McCain is leading, if you can pay any attention to polls anymore, and it's going to take a long time till we get any confidence back in them again after the debacle in North in New Hampshire, almost at North Hampshire. I'm sure there's a place in England called North Hampshire. I don't know. But in South Carolina right now, the American Research Group poll says John McCain is leading the race with 33%, and Huckabee has 23%, so a significant lead by John McCain, with Willard Romney down around 20% and Fred Thompson at 13%. And if Thompson doesn't do anything there in the southern state, I think you could pretty much count him out. I think you can count him out anyway. On the Democratic side, no big surprise, Barack Obama leading Hillary Clinton 44-38%, with 9% for John Edwards. They think John Edwards possibly is taking some of the vote away from Hillary by being there. But, hey, the more the merrier, John. Hang in there. Where else? So we got some other polls. Inside Obama, another poll, an Insider Advantage survey has Barack leading with 41% and Hillary at 31%, so we have a 10% difference right there, significantly higher in that poll. So we shall see. The latest public policy polling survey in South Carolina finds McCain ahead of Huckabee with 28-20%, and Romney at 18% and Fred Thompson at 17%. So that one's a little different story to tell. Going to be interesting to see how that shakes out. I still say, and it's my story, and I am sticking to it, that these Republicans are just fighting to see who's going to be the cannon fodder, because I think that's what they'll be. I do believe that by the time November 4th comes this year, that the American public will be so fed up with the Republicans and the Republican administration that that there'll be an overwhelming win for the Democrats. And hey, don't get me wrong. I hope things go very well between now and then. I hope the economy straightens out and heads up, and we'll still win. There's isn't any doubt in my mind about that. The Democrats, there's going to be a Democrat in the White House, whether it's Edwards, whether it's Obama, whether it's Hillary, I don't know. Now, I do want to tell you, in case you're thinking about doing something else in the second hour, I do want to let you know that I have some comments about one of our Democratic candidates coming up in the second hour that I'm not very pleased with this candidate right now, as of today. Not very pleased at all. I've been a Democrat, a Yellow Dog Democrat, all my life. And I don't know that I've heard anything that displeased me from a leading Democratic contender. Don't know that I've heard anything that's displeased me any more than what we want to talk about in the second hour coming up. So I do hope you'll stay tuned for that and hear me out. Probably will make some of you angry with some of my views on this candidate, but I calls them as I sees them, as you well know. And I'll explain it all coming up in the second hour. Just not very pleased the way things are going right now with one of our candidates. 866-546-5254. We've got news coming up in just about 2 minutes, so it's a little late for a call. Having a little trouble with internet access here at the moment. I hope it's working okay for you. We've got several computers here in the studio, and I see that one of them's not quite not quite acting the way it's supposed to be. It is not the streamer, however, so it appears everything's okay. We'll take care of it during the break, make sure everything's doing what it ought to do. This new technology, you know, I've done radio for a long, long time. And some of the new technology, rather fascinating to see what you can do. You know, well, we've got a beautiful studio here at the Guy James Show, worthy of any radio station, certainly of any radio station that I've ever worked at, and I've been in a lot of them as well. But we do have a beautiful studio here, and the technology is so interesting. Back when I first started in radio, you'd get up on a winter morning and have to head down to the station and start up the old tube type transmitter and wait 30 minutes for it to warm up before you started broadcasting, the old country DJ thing, you know, take out the garbage and all that sort of thing. But it's come a long way, baby. And this is what we do here, and here on the Head On Radio Network with internet radio is the way it's going to be. It's the way of the future. So there's little bugaboos here and there now and then, but it is the future of radio. I firmly believe that. I know Bob believes it. John believes it. Mark believes it. I know we all do. And we've got some great plans for you. We've got some very interesting things coming up in the near future. And I do want to remind you, we're going to be in Washington, D.C. next week for the Families USA Conference. And I know you'll want to listen to that show. We'll have a lot to say about health care in America. And I know that's a primary concern to a good many of you as it relates to your pocketbook and your health. We're going to pause for news now coming up. Stay with us. When we come back, we're going to have, I'm afraid, a few harsh words about one of our Democratic candidates. We'll discuss it. Listen to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
In India, a leading environmental research group asked Coca-Cola to shut down a bottling plant in the drought-stricken state of Rajasthan. The scarcity of water has been raised repeatedly by villagers who live near several of the company's bottling sites. George Bush on Tuesday said he disagreed with the national intelligence estimate that Iran did not have nuclear weapons. The Wall Street Journal has exposed the Bush administration's behind-the-scenes machinations to encourage a 14-year-old probe that claims Iranian agents planned the bombing of a Jewish community center in Buenos Aires that killed 85 people. Global warming and rising oil prices are making nuclear power fashionable, drawing a once demonized industry out of the shadows of the Chernobyl disaster. However, some countries hopping on the nuclear bandwagon have abysmal industrial safety records that give many pause for thought. Of the more than 100 nuclear reactors now being built or planned, about half are in China, India, and other developing nations. The International Atomic Energy Agency is already stretched with monitoring Iran and North Korea over their suspected nuclear arms programs, and IAEA Chief Mohammed El-Baradei says his organization cannot be the main guarantor of safety. El-Baradei says the primary responsibility rests with the operators of a nuclear facility and their government. In China, for instance, thousands die annually in the world's most dangerous coal mines, and thousands more in fires, explosions, and other accidents. The New York Times reports 6 months after taking over as president of the World Bank, Robert Zoellick faced new turmoil Wednesday with the resignation of the chief of the bank's anti-fraud unit. Bank officials said that despite Zoellick's efforts to heal the wounds left from the stormy tenure of his predecessor, Paul Wolfowitz, the resignation of Suzanne Folsom, Wolfowitz's top deputy in his anti-corruption campaign, was stirring new bitterness. Officials said several of Folsom's aides were also resigning. Many bank officials welcomed Folsom's resignation, saying she had been selective in the prosecutions or overly aggressive. relations between Zelig and Folsom, which were positive in the beginning, were described as increasingly frayed in recent weeks, especially after editorials in the Wall Street Journal cited internal investigations and suggested that Folsom was being undercut and driven out.
Top of the hour news brought to you by INN World Report.
Are you a conservative Republican who believes George W. Bush did the right thing by invading Iraq? Are you in agreement with Mr. Bush when he says, we need to stay the course no matter how long it takes? Do you agree with the president when he says that he will never set any time schedule to pull out our troops? Well, if you agree with all that, then you'll certainly want to help out Mr. Bush by signing up your kids or grandkids for military service today. Yes, just call your local Army, Navy, Air Force, or Marine recruiter and tell them the age and social security number of your little Johnny or Susie and make an appointment for a free visit by your local military recruiter. We know that by supporting the president's war, you are a super patriot, and you'll want to be the first on your block to offer up your kids for Mr. Bush's war. Don't worry if you think they're too young. Even if they're only 10 or 11 years old, this war will certainly last long enough for them to get involved. And for the first 15 callers, we're offering absolutely free a CD of the president uttering those famous fighting words, bring 'em on. Yes, this CD will have special meaning to you, especially if your kid is wounded or killed in Iraq. So call now and get your child or grandchild registered today. Just call 1-800-TAKE-MY-KID. That's 1-800-TAKE-MY-KID.
Throw the second switch! Throw the third switch!
Not the third switch.
Throw it, I say! Throw it!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? My creation! Life.
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Thank you. Thank you for tuning into the Guy James Show this afternoon on this Thursday afternoon. Once again, I want to remind you that next Thursday and Friday, we'll do our show from Washington, D.C., from the beautiful Renaissance Mayflower Hotel, the Health America Conference. We're looking forward to that very much and seeing a lot of our Democratic colleagues there. So it'll be a lot of fun to be there, as always. Love Washington, D.C. I do. Well, I might as well get to this. I thought about whether or not I should talk about this today or not. And then I thought, you know, Guy, you're always completely honest with your audience. And if you are thinking it, you should say it. And if you think of its importance, you should say it. And it's something I hate to talk about, but I'm going to. And it's about cutting your own political throat. Yesterday, when I played the clip with Mike Huckabee saying that we need to rewrite the Constitution and make it, more biblical. I was pleased to bring you that story. I really was. I found it interesting that a candidate for president, especially a Republican, because of how the Republicans always run around saying they're strict constitutionalists, you know. I found it interesting, and to say the least, I also found it entertaining that a guy who had done fairly well in the primary process would say something so stunningly stupid. And I listened to that clip of the huckster a half a dozen times because I just couldn't believe that anyone could be such an idiot and still be able to feed himself. But this quote from Obama that's going around today, and I've got to tell you, I'm shocked. And I don't say that lightly. I am shocked, and I'm extremely disappointed. I'm very sad that Barack Obama would stoop so low and, in my opinion, embrace what I think is the worst kind of politics, and that's pandering in order to grab a few votes. And I know they all do it, but I didn't think that he would stoop to this. And of what he said about Ronald Reagan, and I'm going to play it for you in a minute, and I know a lot of you have probably already heard it. If what he said about Reagan is something he actually believes, then he has no business whatsoever running for president as a Democrat. In fact, if he really believes what he said, then I don't think he'd have the intelligence necessary to be the president of the United States. Now, I've been sitting here day after day telling you that I'm very proud of the leading candidates of the Democratic side of the ledger. And I hope that Barack Obama comes out with some kind of rational, believable explanation about what he said concerning Reagan, or is going to drastically change my opinion of him. And let me just play it for you.
Present myself as some sort of singular figure. I think part of what's different are the times. I do think that, for example, the 1980 election was different. I mean, I think Ronald Reagan changed the trajectory of America in a way that, you know, Richard Nixon did not, and in a way that Bill Clinton did not. He put us on a fundamentally different path because the country was ready for it. I think they felt like, you know, with all the excesses of the 60s and the 70s, and, you know, government had grown and grown, but there wasn't much sense of accountability in terms of how it was operating. And I think, you know, people just tapped in. He tapped into what people were already feeling, which is we want clarity, we want optimism, we want you know, a return to that sense of dynamism and you know, entrepreneurship that had been missing.
That quote alone is bad enough. And I'll get to my ideas on it in a moment. And I stewed about that one all morning. And then I heard this coming out of the same interview.
I mean, I think it's fair to say the Republicans were the party of ideas for a pretty long chunk of time there over the last 10, 15 years, in the sense that they were challenging conventional wisdom.
Now, the Republicans were the party of ideas over the last 10 or 15 years. And we'll get to all that. And I know Obama was just a kid during Reagan's presidency, but with his educational background, certainly he would have had to have studied the facts about the Reagan years. Anyone at all studying the facts would have to discover the fact that indeed Ronald Reagan did change the trajectory of America, all right. Oh, he changed it. He changed it, all right. And we're still suffering today because of the trajectory that Ronald Reagan changed in this country. On Reagan's watch, we began the decline of the middle class, and it was no accident. The tax cuts for the rich, the joke that was his trickle-down economics that will still elicit laughter, even today among prominent economists. And Obama says clarity and optimism, the Reagan years. I'm really sorry, Barack, but you've lost me on those counts. You have lost me on those counts altogether. You stop and think about the Reagan years. It was during the Reagan years that most of us began to understand where the wealth of America was headed. We were brought up during a time when the working man was making some progress in this country, where the working man could afford to send his kid to college, where both of the family, the mom and dad, both didn't have to work. The working man was making progress in this country. And the wealth of America was being spread out. And that all came to an end. It didn't come completely to an end, but the end of that started during the Reagan years. It was during the Reagan years that the infrastructure of this horrible modern-day conservative movement was built and funded. And it was then that 1% I was talking about earlier, it was then that 1% of Americans began to stuff their mattresses with cash that they'd squeezed from the middle class. This was a trend that started with Ronald Reagan, and it was no accident, and it continued on with Daddy Bush and Junior Bush, because that is exactly the direction they intended to go. And what about Clinton? You know, face it, he couldn't have done anything about it if he'd wanted to in the face of the onslaught against him by the Republican Party. And that onslaught had nothing to do with sex with Monica Lewinsky. Nothing. It had to do with negating the power of Bill Clinton and the Democrats, because they had temporarily put a stop to the decline of the middle class. Or at least they wanted to. Barack, the Reagan years was when we learned for a fact that politics drives economics, not the other way around. Not the other way around. And we've got Barack Obama telling us we need to have Reagan's clarity and optimism. Think about that for a moment. Here's a guy that's had the best education. Anybody remember Reagan setting his sights on busting the Air Traffic Controllers Union and doing it? Anyone aware of the fact that the air traffic controllers problem have increased drastically since that time? Reagan busted a union to show the rest of the working men and women in this country that busting unions was going to be a sign of the time, and he was right. Do you remember Iran-Contra, Barack? Illegally selling arms to the Iranians. Ollie North making deals with the Iranians so Reagan could have enough cash to fund his secret war in Nicaragua, and openly defy the direct orders of the Congress of the United States of America, and you are making reference to Ronald Reagan as though that is something that you should try and emulate, that a leader should try and emulate? I think not. He backed a bunch of criminals. And that's all you can say for them, is they were criminals, and they were tried, and they were convicted, and then he pardoned them. And you quote Ronald Reagan? You remember John Negroponte? You remember Elliot Abrams and Charles Allen and Ollie North and Bill Gates? All of them working for Bush now? I hate to break it to you, Barack, but the Bushes and these guys I just mentioned are all part of this rabid dog conservative gang that's been raping and pillaging the country for the past 30 years. These are Republicans, Barack. They're clones of one another, and they've set out to grab America and everything in it for themselves. What the hell are you doing quoting Ronald Reagan? This just makes me sick. I heard Barack Obama saying one of his shortcomings the other day was the inability to do paperwork. Did this include his college exams or something? How could you talk about Reagan this way with any knowledge and understanding whatsoever of the Reagan years and the massive conspiracy by the right wing against the citizens of this country? Yes, against the citizens of this country. He can't be that ignorant. He can't be. I really think he's pandering for votes from the right and from the centrist Democrats. Ronald Reagan changed the trajectory of America in a way that Richard didn't and Clinton did not. Sense of clarity and optimism. Give me a break. That just disgusts me. What do we got here? Another Liber Dem? Ronald Reagan, a Democratic candidate for the presidency of the United States, bragging on Ronald Reagan? Look, I like peace and tranquility probably more than most folks do. I like harmony. I like to get along with people. I really don't like confrontation. I won't run from it, but I don't like it. And I enjoy keeping my blood pressure fairly normal with the help of a few pills each day. And all in all, I'm a pretty peaceful type guy. But I don't think I can take any more of this talk from Democrats about reaching across the aisle and working in a bipartisan way with the Republicans. We all know that that is pure crap. And if our candidates for office don't know it's crap, then they shouldn't be running. And if they do know it's crap, then they keep saying it, that they aren't being honest and they don't deserve our trust anyway. Why don't I want them preaching this reaching across the aisle stuff and let's be nice? Because anyone who's been paying attention to politics 101 for the past 30 years in this country knows that if a Democrat reaches across the aisle to try and work in a bipartisan manner with the Republicans, he comes back with a bloody stump. And it's gotten worse each and every year. Even when they're in the minority, the Republicans. You need to stop and think about the history of this whole thing. I've lived it. Many of you have lived it. And you remember that over the last, what, three decades or so, the Republicans rounded up a few of their ultra-rich party members who were dyed-in-the-wool conservatives, along with some Falwells and some Robertsons and some others, and they decided they'd throw money at some institution that today have become very powerful. And I'm talking about the Family Research Council, the Heritage Foundation, the Federalist Society, the Brookings Institute, and a whole hell of a lot more of them. And what's worse is they worked hand in hand with the owners of the media who had figured out that news wasn't their big cash cow anymore and that entertainment made them more money. And they formed a new class of so-called media figures that trumpeted the right-wing conservative message 24/7. And these people were all well compensated for their work, and some of them have become huge financial successes, both for themselves and for their syndicators, guys like Limbaugh and Hannity and that freak Drudge, and a host of others have made their livings by going on radio and TV either as host or guest and spewing the right-wing message nonstop. And some of these guys have been around for quite a while. And as long as they mouth the party line, they're going to continue to have their bills paid by the radical right-wing conservatives who evidently don't care how much money they have to spend to gain control of power and the influence in this country and in the world, and they are doing it. And the insidious part of all of this is that the uber-rich conservatives who've continued to fund these operations, they don't overtly push their ideas by shouting orders to Limbaugh and Hannity and Fox News, or do they tell the magazines they fund what to write? They simply know that as long as they're paying the bills, their ideas are going to be put forth with the right spin. And to say the very least, in efforts of gaining power and money, their efforts have paid off handsomely. And the sad part about all it is, they've kept wages low. Unions have been, for all practical purposes, neutered in this country. Corporate power has increased enormously, even to the effect that government is working for the corporations, and in some cases even funding them. Can you say Blackwater? You know, the government no longer protects the people. It protects its corporate masters who buy their very own politicians so as to keep this nice little circle jerk going just the way they want it to. And the thing is, who's kidding who here? We constantly hear how productive the American worker is. And this all goes back to this thing of Ronald Reagan I'm talking about, the point I'm making here, and when it started, and why we're at where we're at today. Yes, the American worker is productive, but has the American worker reaped the rewards of that increased productivity? The answer is no, hell no. The corporate masters have reaped the rewards, all of them. Not only that, but in addition to keeping the working man wages down, the corporate masters have begun to take away the benefits the unions fought for decades to get. Insurance, sick days, pensions gone by the wayside. Some people work for companies for 30 years and having their pensions stolen right from under their noses now when they go bankrupt and throw a golden parachute at the CEO and give him a few million bucks, or in some cases, many million bucks to go out the door. Screw the workers. Corporations are gradually taking these things away from their workers and handing the money to their stockholders and to the upper echelon of the management of these companies. And the pillaging of the working man, it began in interest, in earnest. And it began really in earnest during the Reagan years. And you take a good look at this housing crisis. Who walked off with all the money in this deal? Everywhere you look, the working man is getting ripped off. The conservative cabal set out to get it done, and they're doing it, and they're doing it with a lot of success. It's good to be the king. But we've got Democratic politicians running from office who I don't think understand this whole scenario. Obama keep saying we're having a divisive food fight in Washington. Hey, Barack, if it were as insignificant as a food fight, I wouldn't be worried. It goes a hell of a lot deeper than that. Do you remember that the Republicans are setting new records with their filibusters? Do you remember that? And do you remember how the press, instead of calling the filibusters what they really are, is obstructionism? They always just come back and say, well, the Democrats didn't get the 60 votes needed to pass to overcome a veto. You know why this is? I'll tell you why this happens. It's because there is no such thing as the liberal media. It's owned by the right, and they use it, and they use it against the Democrat, and it's a huge advantage for them. A huge advantage. And Obama, do you not have an understanding of what's happening to our country and who is doing it? The party of ideas, the Republicans? Do you not know that in order to get into a Bush rally, you have to be screened? But anybody can get into a Democratic rally? Why is that? and they're the party of ideas. They shut ideas out of their political rallies. And you, a candidate for the presidency of the United States, is saying they were the party of ideas. And when you start quoting Reagan, it worries me that you don't get it. And it shows me that you just might be willing to practice the wrong kind of politics. And I want to tell you, if you're not smart enough to figure it out, your handlers ought to be, if you do practice the politics of conciliation with these conservatives, they will eat you alive. They only understand one kind of politics, and that's PowerPoint, baby. It's in-your-face, smash-mouth politics. It's bare-knuckles politics, and they have been successfully using it for over a generation. Reach across the aisle, my ass. A food fight. You know, I agree with everybody, and I know this is maybe bothering me more than it should. And I know Obama is a masterful speaker. And his speeches bring people to tears. But maybe we ought to examine every word. He said it's not, and I've heard him say this in his stump speech over and over again, he said it's not about tearing your opponent down, but about lifting your country up. Well, that's a nice line. But in this case, when we're dealing with these radical right-wing conservatives, is tearing your opponent down and lifting your country up, aren't those the two things the same? Don't we have to tear down this modern-day radical right-wing conservative movement in order to lift this country up? You think they're going to roll over and you're going to stick out your hand in friendship and they're going to roll? Well, sure, Mr. Obama, we'll work with you. Yeah. Sure they will. You may have confidence in that, buddy. I don't. Been around too long. Frankly, Barack, there are many things that have to be torn down. Racism. The rampant Republican bias against gays, the Republican desire to tell a woman what she can do with her body. There are many things that have to be torn down before America can truly be lifted up to new heights. Many things. And you'd better understand, Barack, that if you gain a Democratic nomination and are elected president, they'll drag out the lumber and the nails the very first day and crucify you. Do remember that the moment that you try and gain health care for all Americans, that they will savagely attack you. You'll need to take a look at what happened to Reid and Pelosi. Oh, they both said they were going to reach out. They did, didn't they? They didn't end the war by taking away the funding. They didn't push for impeachment. They reached and they reached and reached, and what has it gotten them? Except for defeat. And humiliation within their own party. I am thoroughly disgusted by hearing this today. I heard Barack Obama say the other day, as you know, I've learned in my life that you can stand firm in your principles while still reaching out to those who might not always agree with you. And I ask the question, what principles are you talking about here? Would these be the principles of co-equal branches of government? Not in the Republicans' playbook. Would they be the principle that high government officials can break the law any damn time they want to, any way they want to? The principles that elections aren't stolen? The principles that this country doesn't torture people? The principle that maybe, just maybe, everyone in this country is equal before the law? That maybe we don't start wars on fake evidence? Do not have any faith in these rabid, mad dog conservative Republicans, Mr. Obama, because you'll eat it. you will eat it. Unless you're prepared to, like I said, go bare knuckles with these people, they will kick your ass. And that's a fact. How do you feel about it? 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Do you think I'm being too harsh on Mr. Obama? I have to be honest with you. I nearly shed a tear when I heard him bringing that up about Ronald Reagan. I could not believe what I was hearing. I thought I was hearing an edited audio, and I went back and I played it again and again and again, thinking that he meant something else. But I'm very clear on what he meant. Very clear. And I just don't like it. 866-546-5254. If you'd like to call us here on the show. And we're going to take a very quick break and be right back.
Round up the usual suspects.
Hi, boys and girls. This is Rick Goodner, part of the Weekend Wrecking Crew. And I'm here to tell you that you cannot miss Billy Shears. The man knows his music. The man knows what you're thinking. Tune in and listen. You'll be surprised. He's going to play the very song that you were thinking that you needed to hear. Ah, he's a genius. Maybe a bit psychic. I promise you. Tune in on the weekend, listen to Billy Shears Night Sounds, and you will hear the song you've been waiting to hear. And you'll enjoy your time as much as I do. Right here on the Horn Head On Radio Network. Make sure you don't miss what you've been waiting to hear with Billy Shear.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Play as time goes by.
Welcome back to the Guy James Show. Oh, my. Having one of those days after I heard that. Did I overreact to that? What do you think? Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is William in Hollywood.
Hi, William.
How are you doing?
Good.
Good. Oh, man. You know, no, I don't think you're going overboard at all. I think you hit the nail precisely on the head.
Why, and, why would he do it?
You know, I guess it's just pandering. I mean, what else can it be? And you were saying earlier, like in the beginning of it, he'd have to say something to turn this around. I mean, what can you possibly say to turn that around, that statement he made?
Jesus, doesn't he remember that it was Ronald Reagan who intentionally, either Mississippi or Alabama, went there to start his campaign and started in with the talk about welfare queens and all that? He intentionally did that against the black people, and here's Obama saying this? I can't believe it.
I know. And how's he going to, how do you, you can't spin that now.
No,
that's like putting a dagger in a heart and expecting the person to revive the person or something. You know, how are you going to fix that?
I just think it's a critical mistake. I do. And by the way, anybody wants to hear those clips, news.rgj.com. news.rgj.com. It's got both of them. I played on there. It's got the whole interview on there, and it's.
Well, you know, another thing that troubles me is that in the very beginning he said excesses. No, he didn't define that. But
yeah.
Excesses, I saw the excesses. When I live in Hollywood in the 80s, when Reagan was just starting up his destruction, all of a sudden all these homes were hospitals and emergency centers and all that, you know, where the people that couldn't take care of themselves.
Yeah, I mean, here's a guy that took
the all out on the streets here.
Absolutely. Closed down asylums and closed down places for the insane. Threw the people out into the streets.
Yes, and that's what keys me into his excesses. You know, when he's in the beginning of his, when he started his little insane speech there. Those are the excesses. You know, what else is he referring to?
I can't imagine.
The excesses to me sound like, you know, anything that has to do with the downtrodden or the people that can't take care of themselves. I mean, that goes from all types of social programs. That, to me, is the only thing he could be focusing on, you know, excesses. Or is it, I mean, was he blatantly referring or not blatantly, but underlying referring to Clinton in the White House with the BJ, you know? Is that what he was trying to say? I mean, I don't get it.
You know, I just, I don't know about you, but that BJ just didn't have any effect on my life.
No,
you know, and nobody else's life except him, and it wouldn't have if it hadn't become public. But, you know, the thing is, you know, here we had Reagan deeply involved in the Iran-Contra scandal. Whether he was coherent during that time, who knows? But, you know, we backed the Guatemalan government during his era and the Contras, and they killed about 100,000 Mayan Indians down there. And we were, you know, he was saying that the Contras were like the Americans' founding fathers. And, you know, he backed one despot after another. Probably is responsible for giving Osama bin Laden his start.
Probably. And if it wasn't him, which we really don't know for sure and probably never will know what kind of condition Reagan's brain was back then, even when he first took office, then you've got to look at who? Bush Sr.
Yeah.
I mean, where else can you look?
Bush, CIA, background.
Mm-hmm.
Denied, what was it he said? He wasn't in the loop in Iran-Contra.
Right.
Former CIA director and vice president, he wasn't in the loop. I believe that.
And when they had Reagan way back then, when they were questioning him, and this judge was questioning him on TV about the Iran-Contra, and he didn't know, he couldn't remember, he couldn't recall. And I was screaming at the TV set, but at that time I didn't know. I don't think anybody knew that Reagan was in that state of Alzheimer's.
Well, I knew something was wrong, but I just thought he was a fantastic liar. But I remember that day that he couldn't remember the name of his Joint Chiefs of Staff chairman while being questioned. I thought, whoa, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
There's something terribly wrong here.
Mm-hmm.
But even so, you know, that's not an excuse. If you've got an infirmity like that, you or somebody around you or family, you make sure that the keys to the car are turned over to somebody responsible.
Right.
This
brings up the whole issue of the entire Reagan administration and the entire time he was in office with Bush, and then Obama comes out with this. I mean, that's like stirring up the bacteria at the bottom of the well.
He started all this thing with Saddam. I've been in many an argument with a Republican over Ronald Reagan, and they, you know, they, their eyes glaze over and they talk about him as though he's some sort of a revered god. And, and I'm thinking, do you know what I know about Ronald Reagan? Do you know anything more than that? You look at him as this kindly old man that gave a good speech and the great communicator. Do you know any more than that? And they usually don't.
Yeah, you wonder if it's disconnect or denial.
Yeah, well, you know, he was their great savior that came along after all those years, after the Nixon disgrace, and all those years they wanted to get back, and they finally did. I mean, Gerry Ford didn't count. And, you know, I think that's why they like him so much. He saved their ass politically. He finally got Republicans back in the White House and in position of power, and they've hung on to it ever since, really.
Right.
Exactly. So from that end of it, just pure bald-headed politics, I understand why they like him so much. But for the good of this country, I'll never, ever understand why anybody would say anything good about Ron Reagan. Never.
No, you can't find anything good about Reagan any more than you can about Bush Jr.
No, certainly not.
One bit of difference in that respect.
Exactly right. William, thanks for your call. It's always good to hear from you. How are things in the West today? It's always never rains in Southern California.
Well, we had some rain, thankfully, but it didn't help with all the fires and the mud. But it wasn't. I guess it didn't turn out too badly.
You're out of that mode now, are you, with the fires and the mud?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot that's burned, but not around where I live. But you know, a lot of the surrounding areas in Malibu and so forth.
It's about time for the fires to start here in Southwest Florida. It's been extremely dry, and we'll start having fires here any day now, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Just, you know, you would think where there's, well, Florida, I mean, especially southern Florida, the Everglades has always been those dry periods and the fires, but.
Yeah. Well, it's a coming. William, yeah. Thanks for calling. It's very, very good to hear from you.
Well, it's good to talk to you.
Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Talked to a man over the weekend, and he told me that Ronald Reagan was his idol. And we started this discussion, and I brought up, you know, all the stuff I just mentioned, and more. And he stood there without refuting a damn bit of it, saying, I don't care what you say, I love Ronald Reagan. Finally, you have to turn around and walk away from that. And, you know, I just think it's the attitude of these Reaganites. I know a lot of people that got fooled by him. I do. You do as well. But in the background of the Reagan years, you had all these people that I talked about earlier toiling away. Building these foundations, building the American Enterprise Group, making the Heritage Foundation powerful. Working very hard to do that. Falwell and his group. Pat Robertson. James Dobson. They were all nurturing this rabid conservatism. Family values. Some family values. Some family values. Oh, my God. You can say what you want to about Hollywood, which I don't claim politically. You know, the actors and all that stuff. I don't give a damn about any of that. I don't care which actors for who politically and all that. They seem to like to make a lot of hay off of that. It doesn't matter to me whatsoever. In fact, who is it, that guy that's going around with the Huckleberry guy? Norris, Chuck Norris. He's an actor. Who gives a damn what he has to say about anything? You know me and my contempt for that sort of thing. But they can make all the fun they want to. You know, when it comes to Ronald Reagan, I just want to know what it is. I mean, it's, and I hope Obama, now they got me tongue-tied here, you know, it's damn rich to complain about racism and then praise the policies of a guy who created the myth of the welfare queen, like I said before, and started his campaign for president in a place of absolute infamy. Do you remember that? And then, you know, complained about somebody mentioning his drug use, which I don't care. It doesn't matter to me one way or another. And then embrace a guy like Reagan who gave us this war on drugs that's been a witch hunt against the minorities and the poor ever since. I swear, I cannot figure out what this is about. You know, if Clinton had said this, if Edwards had said this, you stop and think what Ronald Reagan's legacy did to the lower income and the minority voters that are the base of this party. It would have finished Clinton or Edwards. It would have finished them. I don't know. Are we talking about what we like to call Lieber Dems? Are we? Well, give us a call. Let us know what you think. I guess by now you know what I think about it. I'm not terribly proud of those statements by Mr. Obama. Not at all. I think we'll pause for a break and be back in just a minute. What, 9.5 minutes to the show? You still got time to give us a call, 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Been an interesting day today. I have one of those days. You know, I'll be going along, I'll be nice and calm and everything, and then I'll see something like the Huckabee thing yesterday. Wanting to take the Constitution and rewrite it to be more biblical, and then this thing with Obama today, and just blow my top. I shouldn't be that way, should I? I should remain calm and collected all the time. All the time. I should remain calm and collected like Senator Larry Craig. He appears calm and collected, don't you think? And, you know, I had a friend one time that was a big shot in the ACLU. Name is Benson Woman up in Columbus, Ohio. A lot of you folks up that way probably know Benson. And the ACLU has come to the aid of Larry Craig. You know, and it fascinates me that Rush Limbaugh criticized the ACLU all these years, that they're the worst, most horrible demon organization on the face of the earth, and all these Republicans do. And then the ACLU comes to their aid. In an effort to help Idaho, Senator Larry Craig, the American Civil Liberties Union, is arguing that, and you have to think about this argument for a moment. I read this and I thought, The ACLU is arguing that people who have sex in public bathrooms have an expectation of privacy. Let's look at that for a moment. You're at the airport, and just for personal reasons, I can't go where Larry Craig did, but let's say in another day, in another time, you're at the airport, and you've got your wife with you, or your sweetheart, or maybe you met a gal at the airport, I don't know. And you go into the restroom. And nature's calling, and I don't mean because you have to relieve yourself, but nature's calling. And hormones and whatnot are raging, and so you go into the stall of one of the restrooms and decide to get it on right there. And there's like five stalls. I thought this out. There's like five stalls in this place, and they're all full. And you're over there in one of these stalls, and I didn't really stop to figure out the physics and the logistical nature of this, but you're over there doing what it is you wanted to do, and there's a half a dozen guys waiting outside that want to use the facilities, and they hear this, going on in this stall. And they're in there knocking on the door. Say, hey, let us in. What are you doing in there? He said, leave me alone. Leave me alone. I have a right to privacy. No, wait a minute. I got to go. Open it. Get out of there. Let me in there. What's going on? And no, I have a right to privacy. And you take that case to the Minnesota Supreme Court. How did that case get there? Was it another Larry Craig type thing? 38 years ago, the Minnesota Supreme Court ruled that people who have sex in closed stalls in public restrooms have a reasonable expectation of privacy. I guess that's one of those whatever floats your boat thing, but I certainly would like to have talked to the Minnesota Supreme Court justices at that time and heard the explanation of this whole thing, of why they felt that way. And so this whole thing means that the state cannot prove that Craig was inviting the undercover officer to have sex in public. The government cannot prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Senator Craig was inviting the undercover officer to engage in anything other than sexual intimacy that would not have called attention to itself in a closed stall in a public restroom, the ACLU wrote in its brief. So there you go. There's some information for you if you're ever in Minnesota. I guess it doesn't matter where in Minnesota. I would think Minneapolis-St. Paul is probably the biggest airport there, without question. And you feel the urge, and you want to go into the restroom, and close the door behind you, and there's the two of you, whether it be a guy and a gal, or two guys, or two ladies, I don't care which, doesn't matter to me. I mean, it does matter to me, but it doesn't matter to me what you do. So, go ahead. You are protected by law. The Minnesota Supreme Court says it's okay. And you can just go in there and wail away and just have a hell of a good time and know that your privacy is protected in Minnesota. Oh, never, what's the song? Never, no, I can't think of the name of it. What's his name wrote already? Did I think we'd ever be talking about this on the show? No. No, I didn't. But it's just one of those things, you know, that you just kind of wonder, how did the Supreme Court come to that? Well, what did I have here? I had a note here to myself to mention something today. Oh, here we go. A story out of Wisconsin. And we only got a couple of minutes left, so you better root for the Packers, son, is the name of this, or else. Matthew Kowald is an ardent fan of the Green Bay Packers, but his wife and 7-year-old son probably aren't big fans of him right now because police arrested Kowald Monday at his home in Portage, Wisconsin, after he allegedly restrained his son with tape for an hour and taped a Packers jersey to the boy after he refused to wear it. Investigators say the incident happened during a Packers playoff win against the Seattle Seahawks last Saturday, and his wife took pictures with her cell phone and notified the police. The 38-year-old Kowald pleaded no contest to disorderly conduct and was fined $186. His wife, who has reportedly had other unspecified domestic issues with her husband, has now obtained a restraining order that bars Kowald from coming back in contact with the family. Man, it's tough for a father and son to bond when dad's screaming and the kid's taped to a chair, don't you think? And you know, that guy's going to be paying a lot more than $186 in the future. That kid's going to need therapy for years to come. Bet he doesn't turn out to be a big Packer fan either.